This is
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop.
This is KUT Weekend for the last weekend of August 2020. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5, the NPR station in Austin, Texas. Here's what we got for you this week. Hurricane Laura sends thousands of people evacuating to Austin and surrounding communities.
A real struggle for a lot of families and individuals that are saying, how many times is this going to happen to us?
Why home sales in Austin are doing fine, even though thousands of people are out of work.
As a seller, I would say it's like Field of Dreams. Like, if you list it, it will sell.
And Austin loses two pillars of the Latino community.
People say this all the time about folks that pass away, and it's become kind of cliche, but they really don't make them like that anymore, man.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend.
Thank you, City Manager, Mayor and Council. My name is Juan Ortiz. I'm your Director for Homeland Security and Emergency Management. For the last couple of days, we have been shifting from a COVID response responding to Hurricane Laura.
This was Thursday in front of City Council.
Today, as of last night, we received where we have filled over 1,000 hotel rooms and an estimated number of guests that goes beyond 3,000 guests.
3,000 evacuees is almost four times as many as the city hosted during Hurricane Harvey in 2017. And yeah, this time, because of COVID-19, most were put in hotels, provided three meals a day, and information about what was happening back home. The storm made landfall about 30 miles east of the Texas-Louisiana border near Lake Charles, Louisiana. Governor Greg Abbott took an aerial tour of the damage and said the worst affected area in Texas was the city of Orange.
You saw more rooftops ripped off. You saw more shingles missing. You saw more trees down. You saw big pieces of steel framing wrapped around some trees. You saw some roads that were still inundated underwater, impassable at this particular time. And that's just what I was able to see, either from the sky or from driving down a street. Obviously, as people get closer and look at buildings or homes, there will be additional damages that people have to deal with. That said, as I ask everybody how they feel about working their way through this hurricane, everyone pretty much had the same phrase, and that is, we dodged a bullet. It could have been far worse. We were anticipating, and it was prognosticated, that there would be a storm surge that could very easily exceed 10 feet. I was told earlier that the storm surge was about 3 feet, and that 7-foot differential means all the difference. We would not be gathering here right now had we seen a 10-foot or higher foot storm surge in this region like what was anticipated earlier.
A lot of the evacuees are headed home today because they're from counties like Galveston, where mandatory evacuation orders were issued, but they were spared the brunt of the storm. But there are still people from Southeast Texas and from Louisiana who don't have a home to go back to right now, so they're stuck in Austin. How are people helping them? To learn more about that, I spoke with Austin Disaster Relief Network Executive Director Daniel Geraci.
Well, we're collaborating with the City of Austin, Travis County, and Williamson counties, currently assisting those evacuees as they were coming in. We were greeting them, providing them with whatever really they needed that perhaps they may have forgotten in their quick journey. You know, a lot of times when evacuations happen, people don't have a lot of time to pull it together. So some folks found themselves needing additional clothing, so we offered our thrift store providing them free clothing or other goods. We also provided PPE, personal protection equipment, and hygiene kits. And there was a few that needed financial aid there in the beginning, you know, like gas cards and things like that, just to get back. Some of them were being relocated to other sites, so that put some demand on their own finances. So those are some of the first phases. Also, we have volunteers deployed right now with our call center, fielding all kinds of calls coming in from survivors wondering you know, how things are going with their communities. When can they go back to? What shelter should I go to? And our teams provide emotional and spiritual care too. We tend to forget that a lot of these, a lot of the families, individuals that are evacuating came from Port Arthur, Beaumont areas. And in that particular area, they not only were impacted by Harvey, but Imelda just last year dumped nearly 4 feet of rain in their community. So it's a real struggle for a lot of families and individuals that are saying, how many times is this going to happen to us, right? So we wanted to be there for them for that. So we had our trained volunteers ready to be able to meet those immediate needs.
How many people have you helped and how many volunteers are out there in the field right now?
Well, we were running about 3 to 4 volunteers per hotel, but, you know, it wasn't all at once where every hotel was covered. So it was one hotel, then we'd go to another hotel. I'd say volunteers, we probably have had 30 to 40, probably in and out. In terms of the number of families, 2,578 families were placed into hotels, and then we had thousands of people just drive into Austin paying for their own hotels themselves. And these numbers are coming from the city, and along with 12 families in the convention center. So, well over 3,000 families, it's safe to say, that have been touched by the love of Austin and in the way that we've cared for them and met their needs.
If people want to help right now, what would you recommend they do?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the number one ways to help would be just to financially give. Anytime you have a Category 4 hurricane that was almost a Category 5, the damage is going to be so widespread in the east side of Texas and then going into Louisiana. Thousands of homes will need to be repaired, rebuilt. That's a given, if not hundreds of thousands. So that's the part we don't know, is just how wide and broad, but we're already talking millions and millions and millions of dollars that need to be raised. So we want to encourage people to go to our website at adrn.org to give. But the second thing that one could do at their home, which is COVID safe, is to help us by building what we call care kits. And we're hoping to have 5,000 of these that we can ship to these devastated areas. And what they are is a big plastic tub filled with hygiene items, to towels, to blanket, to pillow, to, we're asking people to choose my kits for maybe a female or a mom with a baby or a male. And so we have all those instructions and a video on how to make your care kit on our website when one just clicks on the Hurricane Laura response effort, and they'll be able to see all that there on the website. We felt like this would be a great way where a lot of people could do a lot of huge work at home and then bring the end product to us that's ready to go, and all we're doing is putting it on the truck and then shipping it out. We're also asking for those that are making the care kits to put a little love letter in there to bless the family, to really encourage them, because when you lose everything, it's not an easy thing. And so those letters end up becoming the most priceless thing in that whole kit. I've heard that from many, many survivors, is the letter really did them in, that brought the tears coming down. And, you know, that's exactly what they need to do. They need to allow that to come out in a tough time.
Yeah, I can imagine how touching that must be.
Well, yeah, especially with the kids. The kids write some amazing stuff. They don't know what they're writing and how impactful it is, but I've seen some amazing letters from kids that just, man, they just bring people to tears.
All right. Well, it sounds there will be many opportunities for people to write those kinds of things, because there's so much that we don't know at this point.
Right now, we're just at the very beginning, right? The news reports coming in, but we really won't have a full grasp until the coming days when we get people out there to really comb through the land and see, because we do know that a lot of people are going to head to Lake Charles, and that's great. We need a lot of help there. But a lot of times when big disasters like this, it's the other cities around that major impacted city that were just as impacted that get forgotten. And they'll need a whole lot of loving too. So we're going to try to, help assist those other areas and make sure that everyone could get back on their feet.
Daniel, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Daniel Geraci is the executive director of the Austin Disaster Relief Network. University of Texas at Austin students started the fall semester on Wednesday. UT Austin is offering a mix of online, in-person, and hybrid courses. KUT's Dani Matias reports on the university's reopening plans amid the coronavirus pandemic.
UT Austin says it'll administer more than 5,000 COVID-19 tests weekly, including testing students, faculty, and staff who are asymptomatic. University officials encourage everyone to screen themselves daily for symptoms by using UT's Protect Texas Together app. Face coverings are required when inside any UT building, unless someone is eating, drinking, or alone in a private office or dorm room. Personal hygiene products and sanitizing stations are available throughout campus. The university says it'll disinfect common areas frequently and provide employees with personal protective equipment. Elevator and restroom occupancy is limited. In-person classes have been expanded throughout the day from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Classroom capacity will be capped at 40% to adhere to social distancing guidelines. The number of undergraduate students living on campus has been reduced to about 4,500 out of a capacity of 7,300. Dining halls are offering contactless service and packaging all meals in to-go containers. Dani Matias, KUT News.
The Texas Transportation Commission has approved the last piece of funding to rebuild I-35 in Central Austin. That work could include putting a portion of the highway underground. KUT Samuel King reports the project is still several years from starting.
Commissioners voted to allocate more than $300 million as part of TxDOT's 2021 Unified Transportation Program. That brings the total funding for the downtown portion of the I-35 Capital Express project to $4.9 billion. Work still wouldn't begin for another 5 years. Commission Chair Bruce Bugg says planning for this project and others should continue despite economic uncertainty.
It is the responsibility of this commission to look ahead to the future needs of Texas and to work to deliver transportation solutions.
Work will begin as soon as 2022 on the Capital Express portions both north of downtown from State Highway 45 north to US 290 east and south of downtown from Ben White to SH 45 southeast. Samuel King, KUT News.
Now you guys use your COVID hoax to like set a checkpoint up so you can take over the parks and start charging? It's unconstitutional. This is not even a city ordinance. This is a illegal power grab of the people's greenbelt, and it's time to free Austin.
This is video from Austin conspiracy theorist and broadcaster Alex Jones earlier in the month, getting mad because some city employees at the Barton Creek Greenbelt were trying to enforce a reservation system that had been enacted to increase social distancing in city parks.
My wife came here this morning when you cult member Coops showed up here and you asked her, where's her reservation? Her reservation is that we live in a free country.
But this kind of behavior is more common than you might think, which is why we wanted to bring in City of Austin Parks and Rec Program Manager Amanda Ross. Amanda, what are you seeing out there?
So we've had a couple instances over the past few months of people who are expressing their frustration with our park monitors and park rangers. And the park monitors and rangers are really there to inform and educate about any closures that we have or areas where we're seeing less social distancing. And we've had individuals screamed at. We've had a knife pulled on an individual. We've had someone was punched in the stomach. So there's been a variety of challenges we've seen over the past few months.
Have there been criminal penalties for these people who've been assaulting city employees?
So we are definitely working with APD on that, but we have not. Those cases haven't come to conclusion yet.
And just to be clear, park rangers are not commissioned officers, right? They don't have a sidearm or anything like that. They're not
right.
Police.
They are not police. Our park rangers are really, we call them our ambassadors in our park systems. And so they're the people there who, if you get lost on a trail, they can help you find your way. They can educate you about, you know, where to recreate with your dog off leash. They can share basic information about our natural resources in our parks. They do a lot of educational programming with students and kids in our parks.
So what are the guidelines that they're trying to enforce to get people so riled up?
Usually it's most people are, I think, understandably a little frustrated and a little cooped up right now. And so we have implemented reservation systems at a few sites, as well as we've put monitors and park monitors and park rangers in places where we're closing areas where we've seen problems. And really they're just sharing the message of here's how you get a reservation or this area is closed at this time.
What was the deal with that Alex Jones incident there that we heard at the top?
That was specific to the Barton Creek Greenbelt, where we're doing a pilot program where we're implementing a reservation system from Thursday through Sunday from 10:30 to 7:30, where we're asking people during kind of those peak hours to get a reservation so that we can help kind of spread out and disperse people throughout the Greenbelt, as well as, you know, over time as well.
So how do you communicate to people, you know, maybe cut these workers some slack, they're just doing their job?
I think it's just that these are people trying to share a message during a really difficult time. And we're just asking for a little bit of grace and a little bit of distance and understanding that they're trying to share a message. And we would appreciate everybody's respect and understanding of the difficult situation they are in as well.
Amanda, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks so much. Take care.
Amanda Ross is a division manager with Austin's Parks and Recreation Department. Home prices in the Austin area are up, and the homes are selling quickly, too. That might be a little bit surprising, considering we're in the middle of a pandemic. Thousands of people are facing cut wages or lost employment. So KUT's Audrey McGlinchey took a look at why Austin's real estate market is more competitive than ever.
Blake Taylor lives with lupus, which makes dealing with a global pandemic that much more stressful. The autoimmune disease means she's potentially more likely to catch COVID-19. And if she does, the results could be worse. So she hardly leaves the house. And when she does, it feels like landmines are everywhere.
I'll go to HEB. I go as soon as they open. And I would wear my mask. And I wear gloves when I go in anywhere. And I'm just super, super careful.
That includes trying to sell her home in Round Rock. Taylor had gotten it as part of her divorce, and now, as a single woman, it was too big for her. But then, before she could list it, the pandemic hit, and she thought about all those prospective homebuyers walking through her house.
When you think about strangers coming in your house, and when someone comes in and looks at a house, they want to look in the cabinets and the closets. You know, they pretty much are touching everything and looking in everything. So it got me really scared thinking about having people come through my house.
Taylor decided to stay put, but then she started noticing something. A neighbor put their house up for sale. It went under contract in just 2 days. Taylor's realtor was telling her now's the time to sell. Well, to be fair, it's always the time to sell in Austin, but now more than ever. Plus, the real estate market might actually keep Taylor safe.
Apparently, you get a lot of offers, and so my understanding is it would go on and sell quickly. So that helped me think, okay, there won't be a ton of people coming through before I sell it.
So what's going on in Austin right now? Well, it's Econ 101, supply and demand. The law that prices are set by how much supply we've got, in this case, houses for sale, and how much demand for those houses there is. For some time now in Austin, we've had low supply and high demand, and the pandemic's just exacerbated the usual. Let's start with the supply side.
So we have seen a reduction in the number of people who are either planning to sell their home and waiting, or the sellers have kind of hit pause.
Jen Klensman is a realtor in Austin. When we look at the number of homes currently for sale in the area, it's down by about a third compared to this time last year. Active listings in July were actually the lowest they've been since at least 2015. This gives people wanting to sell their homes right now an advantage.
As a seller, I would say it's like Field of Dreams. Like if you list it, it will sell right now, no matter what kind of condition your house is in.
For those looking to buy, it's a different story. Laura Kinnard's home near the Travis County Expo Center sold in 4 days. But then when she and her husband turned around to buy a house, they had to get in line, literally.
There were times that we were going to houses that had been on the market for hours. I mean, less than 24 hours, just a couple of hours. And we were kind of having to wait in line outside for all of the people who had gotten there ahead of us. And that just, to me, was so unreal.
Kinnard ended up putting in 13 offers on 13 different houses before one finally got accepted, and only after they offered $20,000 over the asking price. They move into their new house in South Austin this week. For Kinnard, who's 7 months pregnant, it's a big relief.
I could see myself with our baby in that house. I just kind of kept thinking about, like, where I want to place all of our furniture in there and how I want the baby's room to look.
So supply is low, but demand has stayed the same, maybe even gone up. That's because mortgage interest rates have hit the floor.
Never before in the history of our country have we had interest rates in the twos.
Sagar Chapman Thomas has been a realtor in Austin for 20 years.
We have interest rates at 2.5 and 2.75. That's almost free money.
Free money because paying less in interest means you can afford a higher priced house. Which may explain why we're seeing sale prices go up so quickly in Austin right now. Homes are selling at prices 10% higher than they did this time last year. And think about who's able to buy a house right now. It's those who can afford it during a pandemic. Higher income folks with job security who can naturally afford more expensive homes. We could see more supply in the fall, but Chapman Thomas worries it'll be because middle and low income homeowners can no longer afford to pay the mortgage.
We're going to start seeing some pain.
During the pandemic, many homeowners are eligible for a break of up to a year on their mortgage payments. But that money will eventually come due. Recent data suggests that low-income and first-time homeowners have been more likely to ask to put mortgage payments on hold.
I'm sure we have people here in this city right now who have a mortgage and are in forbearance, and that person does not have a job, and that person does not have the pandemic pay anymore, and not being able to pay, what happens next?
For Taylor, who's living with lupus through this pandemic, what's next is that she'll rent. She's afraid she'll have to wait in line with other buyers and have to tour and put offers down on a dozen homes. That's just too much of a risk for her immune system. Audrey McGlinchey, KUT News.
As new COVID-19 cases plateau, Austin health officials say they're comfortable with loosening some restrictions related to the virus. But as KUT's Andrew Weber reports, those officials told the Austin City Council this week that they're still wary as schools and universities reopen to in-person classes.
Austin Public Health says it's confident in loosening restrictions even as schools reopen. While area schools will continue online-only learning through September 8th, Interim Health Authority Dr. Mark Escott says he hopes the Texas Education Agency will offer an opportunity for them to continue remote learning past that window. He told the Austin City Council reopening too quickly could lead to a spike in cases, as it did when the state reopened non-essential businesses.
And we are trying to avoid the same error in our reopening of schools. The challenge that we have is that TEA has threatened to not fund those schools that go beyond their grace period. And I think what we need now is we need some more flexibility from the TEA.
When schools do reopen to in-person instruction, APH says it hopes they do so at a 25% capacity. Health models have suggested in-person learning at schools and universities will lead to new COVID-19 cases. Andrew Weber, KUT News.
Travis County election officials are planning to make it easier for people voting by mail to get their ballots counted. KUT's Ashley Lopez reports this is in anticipation of possible issues with the U.S. Postal Service.
Travis County Clerk Dana Debovois told county commissioners that issues at the post office have put local officials in a jam. But she has a plan for voters to bypass mailing in a ballot if they're nervous about their ballot making it in on time. Debovois says she's setting up sites where people can walk up and hand deliver their ballots.
Voters will still have to, they'll have to show up in person with only their own ballot. They can't deliver anybody else's for them. We want to be sure that voters understand they'll need to produce ID and they'll need to sign a signature roster.
Debevoise says she's also going to have her office set up drive-through lanes for voters to deliver their ballots as well. She says she plans to start opening these sites around October 1st. She says mail-in ballots will likely start going out the last week of September. Ashley Lopez, KUT News.
Time can be a thing that pulls people apart. Especially now, it seems like it's easy to lose track of how long it's been since you called that friend of yours to check in. Lorraine Kentridge-Lasden found that the pandemic helped her cross that divide. Earlier this year, we put out a call for your true stories of overcoming differences for our project called Common Ground. Lorraine wrote about an unexpected gift from an old friend just as the pandemic was starting.
I'm sitting alone in my kitchen. We are in the middle of a worldwide pandemic. Every morning I brew coffee and drink out of my favorite Frida Kahlo mug, looking out my window. In the distance I can see the purple outline of the Texas Hill Country. On this day, on my deck, a brown squirrel is noisily eating the stuffing from the striped cushions on my outdoor chair. The street is deserted this early in the morning. No people. I turn on KUT to hear the latest news. Starting tomorrow, I hear, everyone must wear protective masks when outside, doing errands, visiting parks. And, continued the reporter, instructions on how to make masks can be found in newspapers and online. Really? I spoke to my coffee mug and the squirrel. Do you guys know how to sew? I mentally went through my list of friends, all of whom had vanished, sheltering in place in their own homes. I realized with some degree of panic that I did not know anyone who could sew. But then Laura suddenly popped into my head. We met at the Blanton Museum of Art on the University of Texas campus, where we were both volunteer docents, gallery teachers. We loved art and would wander all over the museum admiring paintings. She was a wonderful friend. We were close, sharing ideas, sharing the love of art and teaching. She was also a very accomplished seamstress and fiber artist. I could picture her in my mind. She was beautiful. She looked as if she stepped out of a Botticelli painting. I last heard from her about 10 years ago. One day, she disappeared from the Blanton program. No explanation, no warning. I never knew why. And I missed her. I got dressed and decided at least I could go for a walk and enjoy the spring weather. The rules did not require a mask for this. And anyway, I didn't have one. By late morning, my neighborhood felt like a big night on 6th Street, or at least what it was before the shutdown. Everyone was walking, most wearing cloth masks of varying hues and thickness. We had to be 6 feet apart. This was serious. So I watched as neighbors grew close to me, then, like a small dance choreographed by the coronavirus, zigged and zagged across the road. At any other time, this obvious avoidance would be met with cold stares and hurt feelings. But my zig and my zag were greeted with thumbs-up signs and hollered, "Thank you!" from the other side of the street. Suddenly, my cell phone blared out, the star-spangled banner, which meant the caller was not in my contacts. I looked at the screen, and for some reason, I decided to answer the call. "Lorraine?" the caller asked. "Who is this?" I asked. "It's Laura. Do you remember me from the Blanton?" "Laura, I do remember you. Are you okay? Is it your dogs? Are they okay?" No, the dogs are fine," she said. "I just called because I want to make you some masks. You know we all need to wear masks now, right?" "Why? Why me?" I asked Laura. I had not heard from her for 10 years. Yet just this very morning, thinking of neighbors and friends, I had thought of her. I want to protect you, was all she said. Coincidence? The universe paying attention? The answer to a prayer? I don't know. What do you think? For a minute, I couldn't speak. Then I took a breath. I may have prayed. I don't know. Yes, I said, I do need masks. I feel so worried, so unprotected, vulnerable. Thank you, Laura. I am truly grateful. And in that moment, with all the tragedy around us, time collapsed into this one precious moment of love and kindness. 3 days later, a bulky package arrived. Inside were four spectacular, brightly colored cotton masks and a note. For Lorraine, from Laura.
That was Lorraine Kentridge-Lazadin with her story for our Common Ground Project. Big thanks to the Austin Public Library and the Library Foundation for partnering with us on this. And you can hear more Common Ground stories at KUT.org. It has been kind of a rough year for the Latino community in Austin. Latinos have accounted for more than half of the area's 26,000 coronavirus cases. Half of the COVID-19 deaths in Travis County are Latinos. And this summer, Latinos lost several longtime pillars of the community. Manuel Cowboy Donley, Ramon Galindo, Lois Villaseñor. KUT's Jerry Quijano has more.
And just this month, two more giants died. Lifelong Austinites whose lives stretched far beyond their East Austin roots. Rosalio Rabbit Duran and San Juan Johnny Limon. Duran helmed Rabbit's Lounge at 6th and Chicon for more than 40 years. He told the University of Texas Voces Oral History Project, quote, "Everyone was welcome and everyone was treated right." Jose Velasquez is a fourth generation Austinite.
It's the spot that everybody went to. Whether you wanted to be around politicals or you wanted to be around blue collar Joes, you just wanted to go listen to some good Tejano music and drink the coldest beer in Austin, that was the spot.
Velasquez has known Duran his entire life. He was godfather to Jose's older brother. But it was when Velasquez launched Hermanos de East Austin, a community organization focused on the promotion and advancement of the people and culture of East Austin, that the two bonded. Duran made Rabbit's Lounge available for community events that Jose organized, things like voter registration drives and backpack and school supply drives.
There was never any drama. There was never people getting loud. It was everybody there was family, and everybody there knew each other. And even when new people came in, they were greeted as family.
The lounge was also a favorite spot to an emergence of Chicano politics in Austin, known as the Brown Machine. Richard Moya, the first Mexican-American elected as Travis County Commissioner, John Trevino Jr., the first Mexican-American elected to the Austin City Council, State Senator and Representative Gonzalo Barrientos, and others like Gus Garcia, the first Mexican-American elected to the Austin Independent School Board and later Mayor of Austin. Paul Saldana, another fourth-generation Austinite and Garcia's chief of staff, says Rabbit's Lounge was a home base of this Chicano political movement.
What they all have in common is Rabbit. Rabbit was the one who would encourage everybody. He would offer up his business and his bar.
The Limon, Duran, Saldana, and Velasquez families are just some of the Latinos who have called Austin home for at least a century. And back then, the city was smaller, so the bonds between these families run deep. He says Duran was very popular because he had a great sense of humor.
And same thing with Johnny and Lois. They had just sort of natural magnetism about them. And it was because it was always about the community. And people knew that they were there to serve the community. It was never about them. They were very humble. All of them very, very humble.
Velasquez says Uncle Johnny, as he was known to so many in the city, represented the best parts of East Austin. He navigated seamlessly between family, politics, and volunteerism. Lonnie Limon is one of Johnny's nephews. He says he knew just how busy his uncle was because he always seemed to be headed off to a different meeting.
But I don't think any of us could have understood the depth of just how many organizations or causes he was behind. And it was tireless and selfless.
Johnny Limon was a man who lost himself in service, whether it was delivering food for Meals on Wheels for more than 20 years, fighting to protect the environment that the Latinos in Austin grew up in, or advocating for the promotion of Tejano music.
If someone said, oh, well, you know, it's mostly older people that listen to it, or, oh, it's mostly, you know, unique to San Antonio, but we're the live music capital of the world, so let's promote the heritage and history of it and let people learn about it.
Lonnie says Johnny was so passionate about promoting Tejano music because it wasn't just about the accordions and the bajos sextos. He wanted to make sure the music and the culture got the voice it deserved in the city.
And I think that's where his real passion was, in making sure that the culture of Tejanos was not forgotten, and that it was not only not forgotten, but that it was promoted, that it was something that people said, you know what, I never realized that it was this mishmash of other cultures created in Texas.
It's going to be nearly impossible to fill the holes left behind by these titans of the Austin community. Saldana says it's incumbent on younger Latinos in the city to learn the stories of people like Limon and Duran, people responsible for the progress and prosperity of Austin.
We cannot let the legacy and the work that was done by, you know, Mrs. Villaseñor, you know, John Limon, Rabbit Duran, and now.
Lonnie wants his Uncle Johnny to be remembered for one thing.
Kindness. He was a kind person. You know, he could be forceful with his opinion, especially when he was speaking on a topic that he was passionate about, be it Tejano music or be it affordable housing. But he was always kind.
Jose Velasquez said only one word will come to mind when he remembers Duran and Limon.
Corazón. You know, people say this all the time about folks that pass away, and it's become kind of cliche, but they really don't make them like that anymore, man. They really don't. And I hope that we take the best of everything that they taught us and are able to create a platform for the generation coming up behind us, because, you know, me, Paul, and Lonnie, we're not spring chickens anymore either, man.
That piece by KUT's Jerry Quijano. That's KUT Weekend for the last weekend of August 2020. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org, email any questions or comments to weekend@kut.org, or just ask me on Twitter. I'm @KUTNathan. Our theme music is by RAC. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org. ¶¶